This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 172, Jacking with His Earl Grey. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Matthew Rushing. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the possible return of Star Trek to Universal Orlando, and the Star Trek characters who would be the most fun to hang out with on the weekend. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt to discuss the TNG episode, Lessons. So let's step into The Ready Room. Hello, Matthew. It's great to have you here on The Ready Room with me this week. Surprisingly, not to talk about DS9 or Enterprise, but to talk about the next generation. How's everything going?
Well, Chris, I'm doing well, and I'm really glad to be here to talk a little Next Generation, mainly because I have completed my Next Generation Blu-ray set, and let me tell you, folks, if you have not gone and gotten yourself the set of TNG on Blu-ray, you are doing yourself a disservice. This show looks fantastic, it looks fabulous, and you're also the reason that I'm not getting Deep Space Nine on Blu-ray right now, so I'm blaming you, people.
Yeah, apparently, I guess the sales of TNG haven't quite been what the studio was hoping for, and so that means that DS9 and Voyager are sort of on the back burner right now from what I read in the news, you know, some discussions that they had, just that, you know, it's really expensive. So go out, buy the TNG Blu-rays, let CBS know that you want DS9 and Voyager remastered as well.
Well, and I got to say, it really does, Chris. It really does look good. I'm very pleased with the work that they did do.
It's fantastic.
The Enterprise D just pops out. I mean, you can see the difference in the paint colors now. That robin's egg blue against the kind of that gray paint and everything with the Aztec patterning and everything. It just looks fantastic. You know, that those red uniforms just really pop right off of Riker. It's fantastic.
Uniforms popping right off of Riker. I hear that happens every night on the ship.
Every time he props his leg up, you know, that little stirrup underneath the boot pops, you know? So they have to keep fixing that at the tailors.
You know, I imagine that his pants have to be very reinforced as well, so there are no rips happening as he props his leg up.
Exactly. Well, and so that he doesn't accidentally slap Data with, you know, that little spandex part that goes underneath to keep the, you know, the leg down.
Him
in the face.
All right. Well, we're going to talk more TNG in the feature today as we're joined by Charlene Schmidt to talk about Lessons. But before that, we're going to talk a little bit about Star Trek in general here. And this is a news story that it's been out for a number of weeks now, but I wanted to talk about it today. And this is the possibility, Matthew, that Star Trek could return to Universal Orlando. They had a Star Trek attraction there in the past, but it's now gone. They have Shrek 4D, which is quite popular, and they're talking about adding a new attraction, and it might be a Star Trek attraction. According to the appropriately named Attractions magazine, guests would once again take on roles in the Star Trek universe, but this time they would be cadets who joined the USS Enterprise on an expedition, or I'm hearing in my head right now,
I'm going on an adventure!
I'm going on an adventure!
Exactly. So I don't know if this is going to happen or not, and if it does, it would most likely be based on the Abramsverse, because Universal would probably license the rights from Paramount as opposed to CBS, which means they would get the movie rights, and that these days means JJ. But what do you think about this? And if they built one, don't worry about the Abramsverse part, just Star Trek in general. What would you want to see in a Star Trek attraction at a theme park?
Can I get on a shuttlecraft with Alice Eve? Can that be a part of the attraction? Because I am booking my tickets now if that's the case.
That sounds better than my idea, which is a shuttle pod one ride where you and a friend get locked in a shuttle pod for 4 hours and you just have a conversation and then they let you out and they take your photo and then you go to the next ride.
I mean, unless that friend was that girl you've been pining for your whole life, you know, and you finally get the chance because you're locked in the shutter pod for 4 hours with nothing but a bottle of whiskey, that could turn out well for you. So, Chris, I don't see a downside here.
What about an attraction where you get to go on a date with Robin Loeffler? I don't know if Ashley Judd is busy these days, but they could bring her down there. She could work at Universal Orlando and play the role of Robin Loeffler, and you get to go in, sit down, have a date with her, just like Wesley in the game.
But see, then I'd just be upset because I'd know she was going on a date, you know, 50 minutes later with some other guy, and I'd just be really frustrated about that. And yeah, that would hurt my heart, I think.
What about from DS9? Any particular rides or special attractions that
I'm thinking special attractions, you know. I'm really thinking that where this ride needs to take place is in a holo suite at Quark's, where and you rebuild the promenade as just this huge attraction, kind of like they had at Star Trek Experience.
Yeah.
But make this one really unique. Maybe make this one an entire circle. And then in the middle of that upstairs on the holo suite is where the actual ride is that you go on, whereas the rest of it is just like shops, you know, for people to shop at and buy the coolest Star Trek memorabilia ever, you know, outside Comic-Con and stuff. So I think that would just be really, really cool. But of course, you know, if we're setting this in the JJ verse, you don't have necessarily the rights to be able to do that. And so that, I don't know, I guess you could really do that. You know, in the movie, the original movie, you go to that big, huge orbital, you know, platform space station.
In the 2009 movie?
Yeah. Maybe they could build that, you know, a part of that.
Yeah.
Where the ride takes place or something. I don't know.
I think that if it were an entire area, as far as the DS9 theme, you know how Disneyland has all these little restaurants where they charge you like $12 mm-hmm. for French fries and things like that?
Yep.
They could have Sisko's there and you could get great, you know, Cajun cuisine.
Be awesome to get some gumbo at Sisko's.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
That'd be
you
quite
could
nice.
Even have Ciroc Lofton just open up a you know,
a branch
restaurant
of,
there.
Of Sarah's.
Yeah. Just have a branch there. You know, it'd be awesome.
I think so. I think Sarah's should become a chain.
Yes, that would be great. So I'd really like that. Well, yeah, there's so many great ideas here. I think it's interesting that they would be thinking about having Star Trek return to Universal Orlando because, you know, right now Star Trek is in so much limbo, I feel like, you know, especially with the fate of the next movie, I think, being what the rest of the franchise hinges on at this point. It makes me feel like those old days when, you know, after the motion picture, well, they were going to do another one, but they only gave them a really strict budget, and this one had to really hit it off, or, you know, they could be completely done for. I get that feeling, so yeah. I'm interested to see where this actually goes.
I don't know if I have that feeling or not, because of the fact that the rights are split between Paramount and CBS, I get the feeling that the movie doesn't have that much bearing on the future of the franchise. Maybe only in the sense that if it's extremely successful and they want to do more films after this one, Paramount might still try to hold CBS off from producing television. On the other hand, I think that there's enough noise being made by fans now that CBS is probably hearing, they're understanding that there is a market for Star Trek on television, and they will probably do something in the next few years, I think. I just kind of get that feeling. And so I feel like it's almost like we have two franchises. It's like we have the film franchise and we have the TV franchise. And I don't think that the future of the TV franchise hinges on the film so much personally.
Well, Chris, here in the States, you know, we have the CW, which has done so well these days with The Flash and Arrow, and two genre-driven shows. They do a lot of them, and they've proven their worth in them. I mean, heck, you got William Shatner tweeting Arrow, Flash, and The 100 every single week. William Shatner is tweeting those shows, as he does a lot of shows. And so the fact that he's watching them, and that it's been a great network and really proving itself, I don't see why CBS doesn't think about putting a new Star Trek series there, because I think it would really flourish under the right leadership.
Yeah, it definitely could. Well, here's another question for you, Matthew, because you're a big Star Wars fan. Do you think that this move by Universal to consider putting Star Trek in their parks could be a preemptive way of competing with Disney World in Orlando in the future? Because it seems that there's no doubt that at some point Disney will try to incorporate more Star Wars into the theme park.
Yes, I think that's probably the case. But at this point right now, Universal has Harry Potter World, yeah, which just opened its second part.
Yeah.
Just, I think, last year.
And it just opened here in Japan last year.
Yeah,
that place is
monster successful, mm-hmm, and will be for a very long time. Yeah. So I could see them really wanting to have Star Trek there so it can kind of compete with the Star Wars that you're going to get in the Disney parks. But honestly, I think right now they have the competition with the Harry Potter world, and especially with two new films coming out in the Harry Potter universe, the Fantastical Beasts series that they're going to do. They have that representation that's going to happen again on screen. And yeah, I feel like having Star Trek there would just have one more thing for them to boast about over, I guess, Disney World.
Yeah.
So,
well, here is a question that's on the minds of geeks everywhere, Matthew. In a head-to-head battle, who would win, the Death Star or Hogwarts?
Death Star or Hogwarts?
Oh, because I think that in Hogwarts, they could just cast a spell and make the Death Star disappear.
That's a possibility, yes. And as well, they could just apparate to all the places they need and destroy it without anybody really knowing. So yeah, you come up with a lot of ways that, you know, Hogwarts doesn't really fly anywhere. So,
but there's got to be a spell for that, Matthew.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I just think of the, you know, who would win, like a Star Destroyer or the Enterprise.
And, yeah, that's the classic one.
Yeah, of course, Picard just beams a photon torpedo to their bridge and blows it up. So it's pretty easy.
All right. Well, we'll see if they do anything with this. There's no timeline at the moment that I'm aware of, but it would be interesting if they did it, just because it would signal, I think, the return of Star Trek to a bit more to the popular culture. You know, we, like you mentioned earlier, we used to have the attraction Star Trek The Experience in Las Vegas. That's gone. And to see Star Trek start to come back to theme parks like this is a signal that the popularity of it is returning and it's being recognized once again. I don't think it'll ever be quite like it was in the golden age in the 90s, but it'd be nice to see it return a bit.
Still kicking myself for not getting to the Experience in those days.
Well, you know, I didn't get there either, and I used to live in Reno, which, of course, is very far away from Las Vegas, even though it's in the same state. But nevertheless, I should have gotten down there at some point, and I never did. So, all right. Well, let's go on to the other thing we're going to talk about in news here today. And this is another StarTrek.com poll. In this one, StarTrek.com asked which Star Trek The Original Series character would be the most fun to have around on the weekend. They got more than 13,000 votes, which is actually about half of what they get in a lot of the polls. And I found that curious because I feel like the fandom for the original series is fading year by year as we all get older and newer fans don't know the original series.
Yeah, apparently, because if they had, Chapel would have been the winner. Clearly, Chapel is the person you want to hang out with on the weekend.
So for you, it would be Chapel.
Okay. No, just kidding. No, if I had seen the poll, I would have voted McCoy because I feel like he'd be great to hang out with on the weekends.
All right.
He knows how to make Georgia Mint juleps.
Exactly. Well, tell us what the results were.
Well, strangely enough, I this is interesting to me. Scotty was the winner with 38% of the vote. Would you have pictured that, Chris, that Scotty would be the top pick?
No.
For hanging out with
not
on the
really.
Weekend?
I mean, I guess people are looking for a drinking buddy. You know, you were telling me on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
About the wonderful bottle of scotch that you've received from your lovely wife. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could see you and Scotty sitting down and enjoying that together, but...
Yes, we could.
I don't know. You know, Scotty... Now, the series Scotty is a bit different than the film Scotty. I don't know that the series Scotty is necessarily going to be sitting around reading technical manuals all the time. But, yeah, I still, you know, he's a very serious guy. I don't know that I would want to hang out on the weekend with him necessarily.
I feel like he's just tinkering with his tools on the weekend. Like,
is that what you
all
think?
Over the
okay.
Enterprise. You know, like, he's just tinkering with things, souping things up. I feel like he's never off, you know, unless
okay.
it's
yeah, right, yeah.
At night when he is sitting down with a glass of scotch and a technical manual.
That's,
I mean,
right.
That's Scotty's fun time.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. Second place was Kirk with 20%.
Yeah, now this I can see. You know, I feel like Kirk probably knows how to kick back and have a good time. I mean, just look at the Christmas party, you know. He gets drunk and does the walk of shame, so he knows how to have a good time.
He might want to wrestle with you with just his spandex pants on.
This is true. That might be part of it. He would also probably teach you how to not slap girls on the butt, you know, as you walked through the
exactly.
corridors, like in Charlie X.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. So you said you would pick McCoy, and McCoy was third in this poll at 11%.
Yeah, I'm surprised that he is not higher, because I feel like McCoy is the kind of good old boy that, you know, could really just kick back on the front porch, basically, on the weekend, watching the world go by and be somebody fun. I feel like he'd have great stories to tell you, you know, about things and... Yeah, McCoy's just the guy that I would want to hang out with. And it helps that McCoy's my favorite character from TOS, so that's why I would have voted for him as well.
Yeah, I can see McCoy. And plus, you know, if you guys get into some shenanigans and you get injured, well, he can always fix you right up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to get into a bar fight, best to do it with a doc by your side.
So right here in the middle of the poll... Tell me if this surprises you. 8%, I mean, that's a low number, but they're right in the middle of the poll, is Spock. Does Spock seem like someone who would be fun to hang around with on the weekend?
Not unless you want to be told what you're doing is wrong the whole time. I mean, you know, I feel like meditating or, you know, reading Surak's teachings, I feel like that, Spock would just be really boring to hang out with on the weekend.
What about once every 7 years? One weekend, once every 7 years, if you're a female fan anyway.
Yeah, if you're a female fan or, yeah. So that could be interesting. I just don't see Spock being interested. But now, strangely enough, the next three are tied with Sulu, Uhura, and Chekhov. And they're all tied for that place there in fifth.
With 7%.
Yeah, 7%. So out of those three, who would you choose?
You know, I actually think Chekhov would be like this fun wingman that you go hang out with, go around town, you know, go to some bars, go to some pubs, and he seems like he would be a fun sidekick.
Have you met Matt? That would be right, what he would say. Exactly. Have you met Matt? Yeah. Have you met Chris? He's a good dancer. You want to take him. He's fun. You'll like him. Yeah, I can see that. And unfortunately, at the end was Nurse Chapel. Apparently, nobody wants to date her. Maybe it's because she's so still hung up on Spock.
Maybe. Yeah. And Rand was not on the poll, so...
Yeah, no Rand, which is surprising because I feel like a few guys might have voted for her.
I think they probably would have.
Yeah.
So real quick before we wrap this up, think about some other series. So TNG, who do you think would be the most fun TNG character to hang out with on the weekend?
Riker.
Riker, yeah.
Riker knows how to have a good time.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, for me...
Riker, yeah, and O'Brien too, because as we'll see later, O'Brien... guy gets married, you know. I mean, he's got a life, apparently. He's out there like dating and
yeah,
that kind of stuff. So yeah. Guy gets around.
I mean, for me it would have to be Loeffler, but
well,
if
that's
I'm
true. Yeah, for you.
Choosing, you know, someone from the main cast, then I would agree with you on Riker.
See, it would be Riker so that he could introduce me to Beverly.
Okay.
So he could be like, "Have you met Matt?" And, you know, in 10 forward, and Beverly would be like, "No, I haven't. Welcome to the Enterprise." And I'd be like, "Welcome to the Enterprise indeed."
Yeah, and you would say, "You know, I don't think I've had my physical examination yet."
And she'd be like, "Well, great. Let's go back to my office."
And then Guinan gives Riker a knowing look.
Like... we all know what that means when Bev says, "Meet me in my office."
So how about DS9?
Oh, man. There's so many people I'd like to hang out with on DS9, honestly. Miles and Julian together, those guys with the holodeck, I think it'd be fantastic. Dax, both Daxes, honestly. Jeez. Both Daxes.
At the same time.
It's not possible. Anyway, both Daxes and, you know, even, yeah, even Sisko, I feel like, you know, if he invited you over because he was cooking, yeah. I mean, can you imagine having one of his home-cooked meals be fantastic?
It'll be great. You know, he'll cook dinner for you, you have a great dinner, and then you go build a ship.
That is true. I don't understand. You know, some people say they just can't get into the characters on Deep Space Nine, but to me, it's like... all these characters are just so normal. Like, I would want to hang out with them because they do everyday things. Like the boys playing darts in the bar, you know, yeah. While having a drink. It just is so very much kind of what we still do. So,
you know, I'm surprised that you didn't say Morn.
You know, Morn's too much of a talker for me. He just won't shut up sometimes. And I like to be able to hang out with somebody where we can have silence every once in a while. And that's not going to happen with Morn.
Yeah, definitely. So for me, if the question is which Deep Space Nine character would be the most fun to have around on the weekend, for me it'd have to be Jadzia. Because,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, she's going to come up with all kinds of fun, crazy things to do.
As long as she takes you to the holodeck program where you have to wear a crazy hat.
Oh, that reminds me. In the attraction at Universal, they need to have a shop called Nice Hats.
Yes. Yes, they do. That would be awesome. Now, Voyager, I would have to go with Tom Paris. Feel like he's the one
you
want to hang out with on the
too.
Weekend.
Yeah.
Tom knows how to have a good time because not only that, I mean, Tom likes Sandrines. He also likes the Fairhaven program, so which I could go get me some Irish whiskey.
And some redheads.
We could hang out at his place and watch TV, because he's got TV.
That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, the guy really knows his stuff. That, or I would do what Kim could never do, poor dumb Harry. I would say yes to Seven.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to... double with Tom with the Delaney sisters, but you're gonna go after Seven.
No. I'd take Seven up on her offer. I wouldn't say no. I'm no dummy.
All right. Well, I was gonna say Paris as well for Voyager. Well, what about Enterprise?
Trip, you know me.
Yeah.
I love Trip. And Trip and I would have a great time. He'd do the fishing and I'd do the reading on the bank, and then, you know, we'd cook some dinner over a campfire and just hang out. An archer would come by, and we'd hang out. We'd watch some water polo or something, and check out the stars, talk about ladies that we like. Then Malcolm would stumble in drunk and talk about how he really likes DePaul's bum. And him and Tripp would get into a fight because he was talking about, you know, DePaul's ass, and Tripp really gets sensitive about that. Yeah, it'd be a great weekend.
All right, well, I'm with you on Tripp as well. So I guess we're thinking pretty much along the same lines here. All right, well, that's all we have to talk about in news. So let's bring in Char and talk about lessons. They say music brings us all together, and that was certainly the case when Captain Picard met Lieutenant Commander Nella Darin. Lessons is perhaps the best glimpse we got into Picard's emotional side, at least where relationships are concerned, and today we're going to discuss this episode, this acoustically perfect episode, right? And to help us do that is none other than the managing editor of Trek FM and co-host of To the Journey, Mistress Charlene Schmidt.
To
hey, Char, how's it
journey.
Going?
Thank you, Matt.
That's the ghost of Voyager past.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it is. It is. Thanks for having me, guys. It's good to be here, as always.
All right. Great to have you here. Now, we could not talk about lessons without having a woman here on the show to discuss this relationship here with us. I didn't want to have three guys talking about Picard's relationship with Lieutenant Commander Darin.
Three dudes talking romance.
That's right.
That'd be either a good podcast, really good or really bad.
Just three dudes talking. That's the name of the podcast. Three dudes talking romance.
That's awesome. Why don't we have that podcast?
You see, we just need to get Dr. Drew Pinsky on here.
Yeah.
And then a really cool like comedian guest, and then the regular host, whoever that may be, and then just dudes all the time. I want to hear it.
Yeah, and every once in a while, you know, you have to have that guy who's really in touch with his feels, and, you know, mm-hmm. it kind of almost tears up every time that you talk about
maybe
something.
Like, was it Rob Schneider on Saturday Night Live, the sensitive naked man?
Oh, God.
From the 1990s?
That reminds me of how I met
so
your
tell
mother
me what's bothering you.
With the naked man, you know, and it works one out of three times. I wonder if Picard thought about trying that with Darin.
Do you suppose he's that in touch with this sensitive side?
I don't think he's that bold, you know.
I think it would take a lot of work for Picard.
He'd
to
have
get
to be
there.
Really drunk. Like, Guinan would really have to, like, you know, just be totally jacking with his Earl Grey for that to happen.
I can just see this, though.
Jacking with his Earl Grey. Well, you know, this episode is all about how Picard no longer is playing his instrument alone anymore.
Ooh, it really is.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, seriously, honestly, as good as this episode is, all I could think about was kind of Misty 3K-ing it and just totally perverting every line that I possibly could and making fun of it. I'm so sorry. My notes are absolute crap for this episode because they're not serious comments on like social commentary or meanings and messages. No, it's like things like that. Instruments.
I'll tell you, when Picard goes into stellar cartography and Darin is there with, who was it? Was it Marquez? The other officer that's helping her with the whatever they're doing with the star, they're having this conversation, and it was just like an episode of Three's Company. I could just hear like Mr. Furley outside the door listening in, and he hears, "We're losing vertical alignment. careful, don't bump it. What's going on in
all
there?
I can think
See,
of now
you can
is,
revert the whole thing.
All I can think of now is that terrible James Bond quote from the end of Moonraker. What's he doing? It's attempting re-entry, sir.
And there's also that line when Darren's playing the keyboard and Picard's playing the flute, and she says, "You're not used to playing with anyone, are you?" And he says, "Just the computer."
Oh, God.
That's right.
You don't
want to
search his internet history.
See?
Space internet.
Oh, it's so easy.
Oh, gosh. Maybe we should, before we go off on a complete tangent, Chris, maybe we should kind of remind people what the episode was about.
That's right. And also, before we get into the synopsis here, I do want to tell everyone, if the audio sounds a little bit strange to you today, we're recording this episode using old-style standard landlines because Stellar Cartography has requested a blackout of our usual online meeting system.
Yeah.
So just a production note there for you.
And we're recording at 3 a.m. I mean, what gives?
Well, it was the only time we could get time. I mean, Darren had taken over the whole ship.
Man, she is such a force of nature. We'll just say it that way.
I mean, she, for one thing, she's brand new on this ship, and suddenly she's just totally, like, having a say in really basic operations here?
Right. This is the flagship of the Federation. It's out in space. They get this new officer on board. The ship is just blacked out. There are no lights on anywhere on the ship. And in this one little room somewhere, there's a glowing orb.
Yep.
It takes all the power.
Phenomenal cosmic power and itty-bitty working space.
Could you imagine her as a podcaster? She'd have the whole ship shut down. Everyone's confined to their quarters, so no one can make any noise.
Right. That way the podcast reaches all subspace bands at once.
That's right. Okay, let's get into the synopsis here now that we're like,
wow, we're really going off the rails already.
Into this. So this is the episode where Lieutenant Commander Nella Darren, a specialist in stellar cartography, comes aboard the Enterprise, and Picard falls in love with her because she's a great piano player. And
pianist.
They get involved. They have a bit of a relationship. Picard does go to Troy to ask for her blessing for him to date a crew member. And at the end, they have to go down to this planet. Actually, it's a very dangerous away mission. Bursalis 3... where even the firestorms have Ponfar. They are on a 7-year cycle, just like Vulcans. Things go wrong, Darren almost gets killed, and Picard realizes that maybe it's not a good idea for him to date crew members.
Baby.
So, let's talk about the episode itself. And let's start with the captain's off hours, because he seems to have a lot of them in this episode. In fact, at one point, he practically tells Riker, "Running the ship has always been your duty, and I trust you completely. I'll be here in my robe."
He does seem to have a lot of free time in this episode all of a sudden.
He really does. So, Matthew, what was your take on Captain Picard's off hours and the sheer quantity, the sheer number of hours he's off duty here?
Well, I thought it was interesting with Picard, you know, at the beginning of the episode, it is that it is the middle of the night and the captain can't sleep. He's, you know, up and he's checking things out on the bridge and he goes to his ready room. He's trying to figure, you know, out what he wants to do. Does he want to read? What does he want to... And keeps finding, obviously, that the... everything's offline because stellar cartography is running an experiment. And
he can't even get a decent cup of tea. It's like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know you're in trouble when the replicators are offline for something. And I just it just makes me wonder how much limited power is on the Enterprise. This is the Federation flagship, and yet we're having to take everything offline at 3 a.m. so that you can run some experiments. Like, I felt like the Enterprise should be just a little bit more powerful than this.
Yeah, I felt like the only thing that was not spared was environmental controls. They've got
gravity. Yeah.
Yeah. Gravity. And that's just about it. She took everything else.
Everybody wakes up.
Everyone's floating around the bridge. What the hell's going on here, Mr. Riker? Well, Stellar
Riker
Cartography asked us to shut the gravity off so they can run an experiment.
Yeah. Riker comes onto the bridge. What the hell is going on?
Everyone's gasping for air. Yeah, life support is on minimum.
Riker's all pissed because he can't prop his leg up with no gravity.
He tries, though. He tries.
He's trying. I can picture it. He's
but got then the momentum just, makes him somersault.
Which really just makes him look spread eagle.
Going in circles.
He's spinning.
It was kind of interesting, though. I mean, I was talking to this the other day with Dan on Literary Treks, and we were talking about, you know, kind of the idea of what happens with people when they're off duty in Starfleet. You know, what do they do? And do you have time off? You know, if you are the captain, do you get to work? Do you have to work every day of the week? Do you have Sundays off? I mean, what? How does that work? And so it was interesting watching this episode and kind of seeing that there are all those times when the crew is off duty, you know, even the captain, and they have things that they do. You know, they, you know, he likes to read, obviously. He's got his physical books with him. He loves drinking his tea. He has dinner with friends. Mostly it seems like Beverly and him have a, you know, a dinner date at least once a week. You know, he loves his music. He's practicing his music with his flute, which is really cool. The callback there. So it was nice to see that these people have a life outside of, you know, what they do every day on the bridge. And it was nice to see that the captain himself, I mean, I can't remember a time other than like Captain's Holiday where we really see Picard, or I guess family too, where you see him outside the bridge or his ready room.
Just being casual.
Yeah. And, you know, you realize that even ferrying ambassadors all the time, there's probably a lot of downtime as captain. You know, as you're looking for new stellar phenomenons and that kind of thing, it's got to be kind of boring sometimes. And so it was nice to see that Picard keeps himself busy. And this episode, he just happens to get busy with some crew members.
I was going to say, I thought it was Beverly who keeps Picard busy.
Not as busy as she'd like.
Yeah, well, they are having their dinner date or breakfast or whatever it was at the beginning of the episode, and then, of course, that all gets shelved, I think, when Commander Darren starts getting involved.
There was no chance for Beverly to come finish that plate of food she left on the table.
Right.
See, that's what I notice about that conversation, is that they're having dinner, and then Picard says, "We'd better go, we're going to be late for the concert," and Beverly has barely eaten any of the food off her plate. She leaves a full plate of food on the table, and they go to a concert.
So she's hungry, and that's going to make her cranky.
Not as cranky.
That's going to make her as cranky as Darren moving in on her man.
This is true, because Beverly totally gets friend-zoned, right? Especially with that whole scene in sick bay. I mean, I actually wrote this down in my notes. This is an exact line in the episode that Darren says. "I guess the captain and I overdid it last night." Doing what? If you didn't know they were playing music together. You know, if I were Beverly, yeah.
Well,
I don't
luckily,
know if I'd be so thrilled with that news. It's no wonder she was jealous.
She mentions the elbow injury being part of playing too much piano.
Yes, I know, I know.
Whew.
Yeah.
But take it out
of
context.
I was playing the keys a little too much last night.
It is funny because, again, you do pick up that subtlety of the way that, you know, Gates is playing it, that her and the captain have this relationship that just never has gone any further. And how slighted does she have to feel in this episode that, you know, the captain is taking interest in a stranger when Beverly's been there the whole time? It's like, is Picard just keeping her in the wings until he stops, you know, goofing around with people like Vosh and Darren?
That's what we all wanted to think, right? For those who were kind of cheering on for that romance to happen. That never really did, though, until the novels.
Yeah, it is interesting because I want to talk about this later, but I don't feel like at least the Next Generation understands how to handle any relationship that is not platonic at all.
Like, no, you're right. You're right. They were totally inept about that, yes.
Which is so strange.
But you know what?
Knowing the writers there, that they couldn't figure out a way to touch this and make it more believable.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? I don't know. As much as Beverly has a right to be jealous, just how jealous does she have a right to be, though? Because even if Picard's not putting the moves on her, couldn't she be maybe putting a little bit of moves on him? I mean, it takes two.
That's true,
So if she's really
it's
jealous
the 24th
about this,
century,
maybe...
for God's sakes! Come on, right. Bev.
Yeah, come on. Girls can make their move, you bet.
Yeah. Wear your workout uniform to his, you know, ready room accidentally, you know? Come on.
Oops, I forgot to change.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a bit of... Now, this episode, of course, is from the 90s, but the show itself having started out in the late 80s, and this is still only 93 we're talking about here, just a little bit of writing women on television that they didn't want to write Beverly as a more aggressive female, that she was going after him. It's more of she's just kind of waiting and pining over him while he... I'm not going to say he ignores her. He spends a lot of time with her, but he clearly is not going to get involved with her. Probably not only because she's a member of his crew, which is what he's concerned about with Darren as well, but the back history with Jack mm-hmm. and the fact that he feels responsible for the death of her husband in the first place.
That's true. Maybe that's why I didn't actually have any sort of confrontation whatsoever until Attached, when they were in each other's minds and they right. had to confront it. I suppose that makes enough sense.
Well, and yes. it's interesting to notice the difference there than between, you know, you've got DS9 and looking for Parmok in all the wrong places, where Jadzia is clearly the aggressor with Worf.
Yeah,
and
sure.
so just the vast difference just between those few years between these episodes of where I think women on TV had come, and the, you know, how much stronger of a character is Jadzia in the way that they write her for going after what she wants, whereas, you know, you would kind of expect that to be the case throughout the 24th century, that, you know, relationally, men and women would be a little bit yeah. more equal in that.
So they had trouble mm-hmm. writing for the future, I think. They're writing futuristic characters who behaved the same way that we do at
right.
the time the show was being written.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because Jadzia wasn't like this wild character. She was a very, very intelligent and very serious and very highly qualified woman and officer who also had this very carefree side as well that would come out in certain situations.
Yeah, anytime the Gallimite came along.
Yeah.
And Jadzia was always a character who always went for what she wanted. Whereas maybe Beverly is a little more timid.
Yeah.
Just in general character. So it could be attributed to that, or who knows. Maybe we're overanalyzing this, because Beverly wasn't the only jealous person with Picard's relationship. I felt like Riker was a little bit on edge about this whole thing, too, about being uncomfortable with...
Do you think Riker was jealous because Darren didn't go after him and went after Picard instead?
He's not used to this, right? I
right.
mean, he always gets the girl, and then suddenly Picard gets one, and he doesn't know what to do, poor Riker.
He's like, have you seen the beard? Have you seen my the way I sit in a chair? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen me play a poker hand? What's not to love
here? I've got a pocket trombone. Come on.
I think there's a scene that was cut from the episode early on where they're welcoming her to the Enterprise. They're in 10 forward. Riker walks up. He props his leg up on the chair right by her face. And she didn't notice. She just kept talking to Data. And that hurt him. And you know, since then, he's been really on edge with her when she asks for things.
Well, he doesn't know how to respond if she doesn't respond to that. Because he's just so used to that provoking the kind of reaction that he's looking for. That's why he's so uncomfortable with the whole idea, is just he doesn't know what to do.
What I don't understand, and I guess we'll just talk about it now, is Riker's reaction. Like, do these people have no idea how to function in relationships that are not platonic? It's like, what is going on? This is the 24th freaking century, and you guys still haven't figured out, apparently, how to date and work, when obviously this is a ship that is full of families and relationships. So what is going on here? Like, I don't understand his uncomfort. Like, he comes to the captain like a crying baby. I felt uncomfortable with what she was asking me. I'm like, you're not man enough to handle this? Like, it just, the whole situation bothered me because
I can see where it can make Riker feel uncomfortable, because it puts you in a position where you feel like if you make, because Picard is his boss, so you feel like if you make a decision, even though you know it's the right decision and you know that you're simply doing your job, it's still easy in that situation to feel like you're being put in a situation where you either give that person what they're asking for, and then you're doing it. You feel like you're doing it because of their connection to your boss, or you don't give them what they're asking for, and then you feel that you should be working more closely with that person or being more accommodating again because they have that relationship.
But that would be different if like the captain and her had been dating for more than like 2 seconds and, you know, this kept happening. But this is the first time. Yeah. And like, I mean, what I love about the conversation that the captain has with Riker when Picard's like, I completely trust you. It's your job and she's doing her job. And if you feel like she is going over the line of her job, then that's different. But stop being a whiny baby and get out of my office. That's basically what he was saying. Like you're reading into something that hasn't happened yet, because even when they were having that discussion, like we've already seen she's kind of a forceful personality with her department, which apparently this is just like corporate Starfleet. You know, we all have our departments and we're all fighting for the right people.
Yeah.
That was weird too. Yeah. But I just was really like, oh, come on, guys. You are writing so, you know, generically here. It's a little bit sad that you can't kind of find a different way to tell the story, because it's, yeah, I just expect more from the Next Generation and its writing staff than to go down this very pedestrian road with this story. It's not original, and it's unfortunate because the rest of the episode and what it's doing for the character Picard is just amazing. I mean, the guy just lights up in a way that we've never seen this man light up, and it's fantastic. You're like, this guy's been dead for years, and this woman comes into his life, and look what she's done. Like, he's happier. He's bouncing along the, you know, the corridors. He's fencing with Riker. You know, I mean, it's...
The fencing with Riker move?
Yeah.
Was exactly like something that Michael Richards would have done as Kramer. Yeah. So long as you enjoy it.
Yeah, but I loved the dating captain. Like, I thought that this was the kind of Picard, like, he was talking about how it might affect his command. But if anything, this has made him more likable to his crew. Obviously, they're happy for him. You know, even Troy says that. Mm-hmm. We're happy for you, those that know you well. And, like, a whole part of his life has come alive that has just been almost dead. And it can't be good, like Troy said, you can't hide those emotions forever. That's not good for you either. And apparently Picard's just allowed that thing to languish for way too long. And that's what I love about this episode is seeing this character in a whole new light.
Oh, yeah, like the totally. Inner light. Indeed. Yeah, no, it really is nice to see this side of Picard really like light up and show him smiling more than once in an episode. It's not even this half-witted smirk. It's like a full, genuine smile several times. It really is nice to see. And I feel like Picard is more of a complete person when he has a more diverse life. He's got his daily life, and he's not just married to his job, which I feel like Star Trek likes to make almost to a fault for the captains. They're so devoted to their job that they just can't do anything else. You know, like Captain Janeway, you know, I mean,
this
episode, you could say, right, is the reason why she could never get it on with Coco. And this is actually, I don't know. I feel like this, if anything, shows why it would have been a good idea for Janeway to go there, especially being so far out. Because, like you said, this is kind of, for as thinly veiled of a social commentary as it is on office workplace relationships, they weren't very progressive about it and didn't show more sides of it. And I think had they explored that more on Voyager, they might have actually gone to those dimensions and shown more of the good, more of the bad. This is just a very simplistic view of it. Well, I mean, it's certainly real, but...
Well, and that's where Deep Space Nine goes with... They go there with Sisko, they go there with Worf and Jadzia, they go there with Julian and Ezri by the end, they go there with Rom and Leeta.
Yeah.
I mean, they go there with a lot of people because I feel like at that point they realize that this is a part of our the lives of the 21st century that we have kind of really done a disservice to. You know, we haven't shown these people being fully rounded people. You know, we've kind of taken that mold that everybody is like Kirk, where they're married to the Enterprise, that they're married to being the captain. You know, but I think that Kirk's probably a little bit more of an anomaly than he is the reality, because you can't have every captain in Starfleet not have that part of their life be alive, you know?
You need complete people who have balanced lives. I mean, everybody on this panel is married, works a full-time job. We are not committed to any one of those things. We have several things going on in our lives. That's what makes us who we are. That's what makes us feel fulfilled as people.
I think with DS9 also, it's a bit easier to write that because they're not really on a Starfleet ship. You know, the station is administered by Starfleet, but really, and Matthew, as you and I have talked about, we actually did a whole episode about it on the Orb, that the station is like a small, it's like a town. You know, it's a small town, it has this big city feel, and people can just be themselves there a bit more than, say, Picard on the Enterprise or Janeway on Voyager, where they're confined to this small ship. The Enterprise is fairly large, Voyager's kind of small, but even the Enterprise is tiny compared to DS9. And you have to be with these same people in these quarters every single day, and you are, it's a much more homogenous environment as well, culturally, compared to the station.
Sure.
So I think that's also where maybe DS9 opened up the possibilities for them more to explore these things and not create. Because I don't think that it's necessarily the case, and our listeners who have military experience can chime in on this on the Babel Conference, but I don't think that it's particularly unreasonable to take a position that the captain would want to distance himself from relationships with subordinates. Even it may be a policy, or even if it's not a strict policy, it's a very uncomfortable situation, I think, for a captain or for a leader.
I guess, but I feel like, again, if we want to reference TOS, you know, Kirk's very comfortable with his crew, and they know him. I mean, God, he's getting drunk at Christmas parties with them.
I'm talking specifically about romantic relationships with someone who serves under you.
Yeah, I guess that's a little bit different, but it still seems like you have to meet
There's
somebody
no doubt
somewhere.
That Picard is more standoffish with the crew in general on TNG than he probably should be.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Well, and in Janeway's case, hearkening back to Voyager, all they have is each other.
Yeah.
She doesn't have a whole lot of choices.
Well, and in that case, it makes complete sense because for all you know, you're going to be stuck in this place for the rest of your life. So you might as well find somebody and be happy for the 70, 80 years that you're around.
Yeah, you just don't know. Whereas with in this episode's case, I mean, Commander Darren just transferred somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, because they have that option. So
yeah. Well, they talked about shore leave together, but I mean, it's clear that this is the end for them.
What was really neat, though, was to see the potential in the characters. And that's what I love about, I mean, you can go through all the Star Trek series and, you know, the potential is there for all the characters because they've set up enough for them to come alive. And they've got great people behind them in the acting, and nobody better than Patrick Stewart, honestly. And you give him more emotional range to play with, you get better stories. And I think that's what makes this episode probably stand out for all the issues I end up having with it by the end of the episode. It's throughout it that I'm enjoying it so much because it's another part of this person that we just haven't seen. And I'm enjoying getting to know the captain on a different level. This captain, I mean, this is the sixth season too. So, you know, we're 19th episode. So we're very close to the end of the sixth season. We're going to go into the seventh season. And, you know, this is one of the first times I feel like that we're really getting, you know, behind the curtains look at who Captain Picard is beyond, you know, the center chair. And that's a really neat thing. And that potential had always been there for the show. And it just taking them kind of so long to get there. And that's sad because I really, you know, the when you watch TNG, I really like so many of these characters, and yet for so much, they kind of keep them hampered down in this static nature because they don't tell a variety of enough stories for them in a variety of different areas of their life. So, and that's, you could really have opened up a whole new possibility for these actors who are fantastic. I mean, the few scenes that I felt like Troy was in were just fantastic, and shows how far that, you know, Marina Sirtis had come from the first season. You know, even just the looks that she's giving Picard, like as she's watching him watch Darren during the concert, are awesome. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like she's like picking up on what he's laying down, you know, because, yeah. And then because Darren's looking back at the captain, and I mean, it's just, it's a fantastic scene, but it's very well done, very well acted, and I love all those little things that the cast are doing and they're getting to do because it's a different type of story for them.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the concert and people having things to do when they're off duty, didn't you feel like they should be able to change out of their Starfleet uniforms to perform at a concert?
Yes.
You know?
I'm so glad you brought this up.
I don't really want to be wearing those pants when I'm playing the cello. I'm sorry. It just seems really chafy, you know, like unless you had a lot of gold bond or something, it just doesn't feel like it'd be comfortable. Let me wear something nice, nice flowy pants, you know, and slacks.
And I have a feeling that those Starfleet issue boots are not the best for working the pedals on the piano.
Probably not.
No, probably not.
Oh, goodness. Well, and that was just another thing, like, I feel like what you just said, Chris, just takes like a tiny bit of thought. You know, and what was great is throughout this whole episode, you know, you got to see Picard in his civvies. And it was great to see that they're not always wearing the uniform. And yeah, that would have made so much more sense for the women to come in and, you know, a dress or some sort of, it's the early 90s, so let's be honest, a pantsuit.
Sweater.
Yeah, and Data, you know, wearing like a tweed jacket or something, you know, it'd just be fantastic.
But, and not just the ladies, I mean, Data should have been wearing a tuxedo.
Oh, yeah.
It is one of those things where you feel like in the writer's room, someone should just say, you know, they're performing classical music. Let's dress them that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the rest of the crew is coming to a concert. Yeah. You know, it's almost presented like they're on duty and they're working, they're tapping whatever they're tapping on the panels, and they're like, oh yeah, we have to perform for the crew. Stop tapping, grab your instrument, go perform, come back, and go back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little odd. And that's, again, that's where, like, I think that you start to move away from that a little bit as you move through, you know, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and Enterprise. You start to see the crew kind of branch out and have, you know, Archer's watching water polo in his, you know, normal clothes, you know, eating pretzels and having a beer with Trip. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're just hanging out. They're having guy time, you know, that kind of stuff that we would start to see. I think it was great. And it's just, I think it's.
Yeah, Enterprise was really good about that. Yeah.
I think it's probably just the formula of the Next Generation at that point, and they hadn't found a way to break out of that completely yet.
So now this raises a question for me. On Voyager, are Neelix's guy time clothes different than the ones that he wears the rest of the time?
I don't want to see Neelix in a robe.
No.
I mean, we saw him in a towel. That was enough.
What about Dr. Phlox in a robe with no slippers and those toenails are sticking out everywhere?
They're just kind of clacking on the deck.
Oh my God.
Clipped them for a week. Yeah.
And that hyperextended smile. Oh my.
Oh, yeah, that might.
That's a Photoshop project I do not want to do.
You might hurt puppies with that picture too. Like, puppies might die if you created that picture.
Puppies, kitties, unicorns, you name it.
Do you think, speaking of Phlox, don't ask me why this just popped in my head. Do you think on Denobula in the winter that kids on the playground play the old trick of trying to get someone to stick their tongue on a cold pole?
Oh, God.
Because you know how long Phlox's tongue is.
Yeah.
Boy, I hope so.
God, so many jokes. So many jokes.
That's what Feasel said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, goodness. She was going to be disappointed when she, you know, hung out with Trip, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
Humans and Denobulans, you're not quite built the same, are you?
T'Pol didn't seem to mind.
What did you guys think about the way that this episode plays up a lot of the continuity for the character of Picard?
That was nice to see, because TNG doesn't do that nearly enough. And in this case, what was really nice in this case is that it's not simply a callback to, oh yeah, yeah, this is a Reskin flute. Oh yeah, I played this music before. But we actually get to see what the music means to Picard and what that experience meant to him and how it affected him. Even though he keeps it bottled up, they do show that his experiences in the inner light had a profound effect on him, and it still does even today. And that music, and this is something, Matthew, that you mentioned on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
How music takes us back in time to places. I know that's certainly the case for me. And when Picard plays that melody for her, you can tell that he goes right back to his life there.
Yeah, one thing that I really do appreciate about this episode is not just the callback and continuity to previous stuff, but the fact that Picard opens up enough to show just how intimate of an experience music is for him, and the fact that he shared it with Commander Darren, how much that means for him to have done that. And clearly she understood the implication of that and appreciated it, which was very good. But for Picard to go on that much of a limb, that is definitely a first.
Also, both in the writing and especially how Patrick Stewart plays it, you can see how he opens up as the episode goes on, because you can tell at first he doesn't really want to reveal that experience.
Right.
He's very dodgy about what he says about it. But then as it goes on, he finally actually tells her the whole story.
Well, that's why it takes, like, what, the first 40 minutes for him to get there?
Well, and that's why, almost, too, he tells her the story and they kiss and lean back and we fade out because some things happen, so. I've been really trying, baby. It's weird that they can't show on a show like that at that point.
Baby.
Let's get it on.
And then Geordi is down in engineering going, I just hear someone say, baby.
And then you hear squeak.
Oh, God.
squeak down the turbo.
Do I hear
down the Jeffries tube?
That sounds like a really good song title, actually. Squeak, squeak, squeak down this turbo shaft.
Well, I was just afraid that they were going
to
run into...
Mission needs to cover that.
Oh, yeah.
I was just afraid they were going to run into Argyle. I mean, it's lucky they weren't, you know, doing some
Argyle
things.
Argyle was busy getting out of the way so we could watch.
You know, I mean, he's just
peeping down the... I'm pretty sure that
Argyle
shot a bootleg video of that that's on Space YouTube right now.
Oh, gosh.
It's in night vision.
Oh, God, that's terrible. Geordi's like, do you hear music?
Yeah.
Your visor
that's
pickup?
That's not music anymore.
Yeah, that's... Oh, whoa. I think that the... What was really great about this is that, you know, we are using probably the second most personal Picard story to tell the next personal Picard story, which was really nice. You know, his whole experience with the inner light, I think, was one of those things that in some ways the books pick up, and the idea that Picard, in his longings, and then of course with Generations, you see this guy really does have a desire to have a family. He just doesn't know how to move past where he has been, you know? And this whole thing was really nice to see, that in some ways, I think his experience in the inner light allows him to even have the ability to be open at this point to somebody coming in like Darren. And, you know, they bond over music, something that they share, and those kind of things. And she's forward enough, and he has enough, you know, cojones to finally kind of make a move. And it's just so nice to see. And I think to me, there's kind of those shadings of the movie Picard here, who's just a little bit looser and a little bit more open, you know, until we go back to kind of classic Picard by the end of the episode, which is, it's a disservice to the character. But yeah, I think it's great in the middle here, and all the way through this episode, almost till the end, you're really getting just a more open and evolved character.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, movie Picard, I hadn't thought about that too much, but we do gradually move that way just a little bit. Because like you said, this is the end of season six, and then we move into the family season, and the next thing you know, we're right there on the screen. I know some people don't like that Picard, though. They think he's too emotional.
Well, he's too angry. He wants to be too much of an action hero, is what I hear a lot of times.
Well, and
where did we get this guy who wants to shoot everything and play, you know, drive dune baggies and stuff?
But prior to that, I know a number of fans who really had a problem with him crying about Renee being killed in the fire in Generations.
See, I don't have a problem with that because I think Home illustrated that just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you haven't seen that episode, you probably don't know where that's coming from, but I think the impact of that loss and the fact that there will be no more Picards really hits Picard in a very, very, just like at the very core of his being.
Well, and you have to take into account, too, you know, you get Picard going through that enormous experience in All Good Things, which I think is life-changing for him. And that's what allows him to walk into the poker game. And his life does take a huge step forward. So by the time we get to the films, Picard is having fun with his crew on the holodeck in a completely new way, a way you really haven't seen him. They're on an old school Enterprise, you know, on the ocean, and he's having a great time until he gets the bad news, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and then of course, who wouldn't be having an emotional response, a huge one, when the Borg come in First Contact? So, I mean, I feel like the extrapolation makes complete sense, especially when the conversation you have with Kirk and Picard is, I think, really paramount to where Picard goes. And if we had maybe gotten a couple more movies, I think it would have been important as well, because his character does. It completely changes from, you know, the series to the films, but it happens through that last episode and then through the movies. I think it makes sense. So,
yeah, and I think that what we saw a little bit towards the end of the series and then what we saw in the movies is really how the character should have been written from the beginning through the entire series.
Not so that. I don't like children, number one. You handle them.
Or certainly we could have seen him make that transition a lot sooner, and then it would have been nicer to have seen a more friendly and open and comfortable Picard, for a lot longer than we did.
You can balance the expectations of what the Starfleet captain is going to be in storytelling with still allowing that character to evolve. I mean, look at Sisko. They did that with Sisko.
Sure.
They can do it with the captain's character to, as we talked about earlier today, actually, you know, to have more of a life outside, but to really where you can come to know many aspects of that character's life and interests and see them as a well-rounded person. Because, I mean, we know that Picard's a very learned man, and I think he is someone that we would generally call a well-rounded person. We just don't actually get to see him doing that most of the time.
Yeah, he just looks like a static character. But we think of him as being well-rounded because of, I think, the way that Patrick Stewart plays him, especially in episodes like this, where we get to see more of that character really, you know, we kind of crack open the bottle, and it's vintage. It's beautiful, you know, and you want to just keep, you know, drinking from that bottle. Instead, they kind of put that cheap wine back in there by the end of the episode, and you're like, it's not the same.
Okay, so Matthew, are you saying that Darren is the great vintage wine and Beverly is that cheap wine that they put back in at the end of the episode?
No, I'm saying
that's what it
that,
sounded like.
Is that?
But I know you love Beverly, so I know you didn't mean that.
Is that Picard in the most of this episode becomes the vintage wine? And then they like kind of transition him back into the cheap wine. And it's just, I was using the analogy because Picard, it's wine. It makes sense, right?
Chateau Picard.
Chateau Picard. And then they gave him Boone's Strawberry Fields at the end, right?
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, what did you guys think about the idea that this is Picard's first time to be in command and have somebody who, you know, he's in love with under his command? Like, this is the first time he has that new experience.
You say that, but I would argue that he's been in love with Beverly the entire time they've been on the ship together.
Agreed.
But he never has problems sitting her to her death. But the moment Darren, like, might die, he turns into a watery baby. I can't handle it.
You make a good point. I think the whole thing with Beverly is that she's been around for so long that it's a completely different thing, whereas this is so new and so intense, and it's happened for the first time in a long time, I suppose, with somebody else for Picard, that he's being overly considerate of all the implications of this.
Well, I think it may not be so much the fact that he might have to send an officer under his command to their death and that he's dating this officer. But we already talked so much about how he lights up when he's around her. And if he has to send her down and she's killed, then he loses that. So it's sort of a defense mechanism for himself. You know, he has found some new happiness, new aspects to his own life, and that could disappear in a flash if something happened. So it's not entirely about her as a person or the officer either.
Yeah,
Beverly, he's very comfortable. I mean, he's known her for so long.
I just wanted him to break out into this song from Frozen. For the first time in forever, there'll be music, there'll be love. You know, it's like, that's exactly what he felt like. And then he just goes back to being boring old Picard.
So Star Trek episodes need more musical interludes.
Yeah, exactly. This could have been a musical episode. I think you're really onto something, Chris, because what I think is so interesting here is to see Picard be kind of driven by fear, which is not something that we've really seen the character have happen to him. You know, he's...
That's true.
And what was most interesting is how emotionally stunted he is. Like, he's allowed himself to be. And the whole issue that him and Troy talk about as he's kind of asking for permission, and she tells him, look, cutting yourself off from your emotions is not good either. Picard really kind of goes back to doing that. And it's a disservice to him as a person, to himself, to not allow himself to have these feelings and move forward with them. And that was what I was so disappointed about. And when you said, Char, that this is not a progressive episode in any sense of the word, it's not. Because Picard kind of goes back to putting himself in the box. And no, I'm not talking about that special box that, you know, Justin Timberlake likes to put himself in. and so it was just disappointing to see them do that to this person who had really, like we said a few times, has just really come alive in this episode. And then we're going to emotionally stunt him again. And like, that's not healthy. Like, Troy should be all over that as a counselor, saying, Captain, you can't make this decision like this for this reason, because this is not healthy for you or for
her. Or even Beverly should have spoken up, and they should have talked about it. And maybe they did off screen. Hopefully they did. They had another dinner and they caught up, and he talked about the experience with her a little bit. But also, I mean, it could be a very human thing for Picard to simply go back to what is comfortable for him, too. This is what he knows. This is what he's used to. And we are very habitual creatures. We like what we're used to. And so once this whole thing kind of got broken off, well, it's back to business as usual.
But having him like shut down in his quarters and just like become this emotional wreck, it just didn't ring true to me for the character Picard. Like, this is a strong, virile man who...
That's the thing, right?
It doesn't
Someone
make
who is
sense.
As strong and intellectually strong and authoritative as Picard is, you would feel they would have a better ability to have a grasp on those emotions themselves than what we see sometimes.
Not necessarily. You know, there's people who are really academically smart but have absolutely no common sense.
Yeah, but
because it's
but
not
that's
something
not
they've
Picard.
Practiced much.
But that's not Picard.
No,
Picard is not academically smart with no common sense. I know there are those kinds of people, right? But Picard is very much not that kind of person. So I think that, I mean, he's very academically smart, but he also knows how to apply that knowledge to the real world in a way that the type of people that you're talking about don't. And so with someone like Picard, I would expect him to have a better grasp on that than what we see on the screen.
But I don't know. Okay, what I'm saying, though, is that he hasn't really flexed these emotional muscles in a long time. And
I'm
so
glad you said emotional muscles as we're talking about this episode.
It's so,
just a reflex.
And so I think his first instinct would be to shut down. Now, what would have been nice is to see him open back up eventually, especially after maybe having somebody call him out on it in an episode or two later, but we didn't. And so this is all we get.
Well, and that's where I think that the movie Picard really makes that change. Like, you know, he sits down to play poker in the very last episode, and then his life is different. You know, he is a more open, emotional being. He's got in touch with himself, finally. In all ways, he's become that healthy character that he's not here. And I think that's where people maybe, I don't know, maybe they just miss it, so that when he is in the films, he is a more emotional, open, more action-oriented person, because he's more driven not just by his intellect, which he has been for the entire series, but he is more driven by his emotion now and how he feels about a subject. And he's never been like that before in the series as much. And when he has been, he's always reverted back to his very intellectual, oh, this is the way we do it, number one, you know. And so it's very nice to see that the character actually did take that growth from the end of the series. And when he popped over to the films, they just continued it on till, you know, you got to the ridiculousness of Nemesis and he's riding around in a doom buggy and you just feel like he's going,
that didn't happen.
You know, like, he's really in touch with himself at that point.
You know, when they jump off the cliff and they land in the ship in Nemesis when they're escaping from the chase, they should have had the da-da-dun-dun-da-da-da-dun-da-da in
there. Yes, they should have.
That would have been awesome. Seriously.
Oh, my God.
Boys and their toys. Seriously, Matt, I almost thought you said touching himself.
No, let's not sing that song.
Oh, gosh.
Playing his instrument alone once again with the computer.
Matthew's going to start singing divinals on us.
No, I am not. That is one thing I am not going to do.
Oh, I want to hear that. Come on.
I will sing Frozen for you guys, but I am not going to sing. Yeah.
No.
Anyway, but that does bring me to one last thing that I thought was really interesting, is the fact that the idea of songs really do have a memory for us. You know, songs really do remember.
Oh, totally.
So that, you know, it happens to me all the time. If, you know, you hear a song on the radio and then you're for like 20 minutes in a car ride, you're off in a whole other world in lost in memory of people and places that, you know, you've been before. And there are places I remember. Sorry, the Beatles. Anyway, but you know what I'm saying? And I love that for Picard here, you know, that tune that he plays that he learned when he was under the influence of the probe is something that brings back those memories. And like for him, every time he plays it, that whole life must play through his head. And like that would be very strange to have an entire lifetime. I mean, we have a song and it plays and we think, oh gosh, you know, I think of maybe one or two people, an entire lifetime.
Or you remember that moment in time, like one event,
right?
And you might remember, you know, 5 minutes of it or 1 minute of it or something. It's just the moment in time, but for him, that's the entire life.
Yeah, it's all. I mean, and that's a really neat thing for them to. It's just kind of an allusion to in this episode, you know, it's one of those kind of really subtle themes that's playing through, is that power of music. And I just really liked that, even though apparently classical music is the only thing that people listen to. So, you know, by then the Beatles are completely dead. You know, Paul is definitely dead. It's kind of sad. Unless it's First Contact and you're hearing a little Steppenwolf and the Doobie Brothers. So,
well, Riker loves his jazz. And as we know from the novels, when Riker takes over the Titan, all the shuttlecraft are named after jazz musicians.
In fact, we were talking about that with John Jackson Miller.
Yeah.
And the title of the episode turned out being, "It's a good thing that Riker doesn't listen to Amy Winehouse."
Shuttlecraft rehab. That's
right.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man. All right. Well, we're getting close to an hour, so let's wrap up with our final thoughts and our ratings here on Lessons. So, Char, how about you?
All right. I think possibly, and maybe you guys can tell me if I'm right or wrong on this, but I think at the time when this aired, this episode was a lot more relevant than perhaps it is today, because I think the whole concept of the commentary they were trying to go for with workplace romance, is it a good idea or a bad idea? And ultimately, a lot of people side on the idea that it's not. Not that that doesn't happen in this day and age, but I think with it being a more widely discussed topic back then, with having more women in the workplace, I think they were trying to say a little more than what it means now, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Because actually, I've seen a lot of people who are like married and working together. I mean, my husband and I even worked together for a little while at the same place. Or people dating within the workplace. Yes, it can have its problems, but it can also be really great. And you're seeing these people all the time. And so it is kind of natural to want to gravitate toward one another in that sense. And so why not on a Starfleet ship? But as far as a TNG episode goes, despite the commentary, I'd say it's a little better than average. I mean, it's not fantastic. It's not like outrageously good, but it's entertaining and it keeps you entertained for 45 minutes. It's not like explosion type of action excitement, but the story is captivating. You do kind of want to see where this goes. And Patrick Stewart's performance is excellent here. And it's nice to see a different light of Picard, as we've talked about for this whole segment. So I'm going to give it probably 3¾ Jeffrey tubes.
Excellent. How about you, Matthew?
Man, this is hard because I think about 80% of this episode I'm completely in love with. And then there's about 20% where I'm just banging my head against the wall going, oh, come on. but on a whole, love covers a multitude of sins. And Picard and Patrick Stewart's performance here is just top-notch, and I think it really carries the episode, the continuity here with my favorite TNG episode of The Inner Light, makes this a winner for me. I love the music in this episode. I love the little musical interludes that him and Darren play. I want those on a TNG CD collection because I think they're just beautifully fantastic, and they're short cues, but they're really, really beautiful, and I honestly can't get enough of the music from The Inner Light because it was just so gorgeous. So, you know, all in all, I think that this is, I would consider a really above average episode because for a while in the episode, they are really doing something brave. By the end, they definitely put all the pieces back in the box, and it's definitely disappointing that happens. But because of all the good things, I would say that this is at least 10 great interludes in Stellar Cartography.
Wow. All right.
Boy.
Now, are those going to be in Stellar Cartography, or are they going to be at the junction of a Jeffrey's tube, which is apparently the most acoustically perfect part of the ship? Now, don't ask me how Darren knew that on a ship this size when she just got there, or how right? that works in an area with open corridors and metal walls, but okay.
Yeah, well, and then here's the other thing. Okay, she's new to this ship, and we don't know how new she is to the ship.
She wasn't there last episode, Char.
Right, so apparently, though, she has time to coordinate and perform in a concert?
Yeah. Well, they needed a piano player. Their other piano player got sick, and so they just grabbed her. You know, she seems like the kind of person that's probably good at everything, right?
That's the impression that I got, yeah. She likes to geek out on Stellar Cartography. She knows her music, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I don't know.
Seems like anything she's got an interest in, she knows to every little technicality.
I mean, the best part about Stellar Cartography is the fact that, you know, when you turn the lights out, the glow of everything in there is pretty romantic. So it doesn't seem like a bad place to have an interlude. So,
yeah. And the gravitational fields bring you together.
That's true.
Apparently.
And you can turn off the gravity and just go crazy.
All right. Well, I'm with you guys pretty much on this. I think it's a great episode for Picard as a character. The music is fantastic, and I love it when they actually do put a lot of music into an episode like this. It's something they do. They don't really do it enough, but they also aren't afraid to go there in Star Trek and put a lot of music into some episodes in cases where you might not see that in other science fiction shows. And I think it works really well. I think one reason it bummed me out that they're wearing their Starfleet uniforms during the concert is that the camera work and the directing is quite nice, how they're showing us the performance, and especially when they pan out from the piano and they come back in. It would have been nice if the setting was a little bit better. But I like the music in here. I like a Picard's character, Patrick Stewart's performance. And I do agree that, yeah, it wasn't a progressive view of workplace romance. And I can understand the position that they're presenting at the time that it was written, but they need to remember that they're writing characters in the 24th century. So you have to progress things. You can't put them in the exact same situations that we are in, because if you do, what's the point of telling the story in the first place? You're not exploring it. You're just saying, you know, if you're at your office, maybe you shouldn't date someone who's working under you. And so you shouldn't do it in the 24th century either. And I don't think that's really the message they were going for, but it is how it came across. So I'm going to give this episode 7 jealous redheads.
Oh, I want to be nice in that room.
All right. Well, Char, thanks for joining us today to talk about Lessons. Before we go, tell everyone where they can find you around the network and around the interwebs.
Sure. You can find me co-hosting To the Journey.
To the Journey.
To the Journey.
Woo woo. With the ISS, Tristan Riddell, we talk anything and everything related to Star Trek Voyager, and new episodes drop on Thursdays. Then you can also contact me on the Twitter, and my handle is Oh the Profanity.
You kept it very clean today.
The hell I did.
Just not an you need more shots of that, you know, apple vodka.
Well, I only had one because I am recording with Tristan to do a TTJ in the morning, so I don't want to be totally, you know, okay, dozed out and
splitting.
I don't know what
anything.
I think about this one.
Wait.
Tristan.
International sex symbol Tristan Riddell actually gets up early on Saturday morning. Isn't he like partying on
Friday? He's a morning
Friday
person.
Night? Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
No. Wow. Yeah, he likes to get up and record Saturday mornings. This is what I do for Trek FM, people.
Wow.
You are a giving woman.
You really are.
I'm a saint,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, you are.
Because I value my sleep.
All right. Well, thanks again, Char.
Thank you for having me.
Man, Chris, I got to say, it is so much fun when you and I and Char get a chance to get together and just talk about Star Trek. It's the good old days of podcasting for me, and I just love when we get a chance to do it. That and I just don't get a chance to podcast enough with you anymore or Char. So
that's true.
It's awesome. What a great way to start the weekend.
Yeah, it's like a classic ready room, right? The three of us together. A little bit of serious discussion, a little bit of going off the rails.
Especially there at the beginning.
At the beginning, yes. Well, that's one thing that makes it classic. There are some classic ready rooms with Char on where we're off the rails about 32 seconds into the discussion.
I think we might have set a record here because we did not even get to the episode summary before it was off the rails. So
it was about 8 minutes in when we did the synopsis. So, yeah.
Oh, goodness.
All right. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed it, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
This episode isn't very good, but...
Are we just going to pin all of our choices?
You pretty much have to. But the thing about this episode, which we talked about a couple weeks ago, I think, is it's a crazy idea.
Earl Grey.
Picard, can you construct a rudimentary lathe?
Go for its weak spot. It's an energy being. It doesn't have a vulnerable spot. Get off the line, the Forge.
The orb.
Or we could just blame it on Janeway somehow, you know, that she scared the Borg into the Gamma Quadrant because they were tired of dealing with her in the Delta Quadrant. I don't know.
To the journey!
Because this is the dangers, by the way, kids, of having babies in the 24th century. Because if Kathy's first word was coffee and she was standing next to the replicator, the next thing you know, you have a hyped up 2-year-old.
The ready room.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, you've got your lucky shirt when you're watching a football game, and your team won when you were wearing it, so now you have to wear it every time. That's also the Enterprise insignia. That's the insignia of the only ship whose crew didn't die.
Yeah.
So
just wear
course,
it on the right color shirt. That's all.
That's right.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And then he turns to her and he says, who is that man that I was just hugging? And she says, that was William Shatner. And he's like, who?
Literary Treks.
Well, you know, I'm really a fan of a lot of, you know, different kinds of, you know, naval fiction. C.S. Forrester, Horatio Hornblower, those novels.
So good.
You know, Patrick O'Brien, the Master and Commander books. Mm-hmm. These are all things which sort of put me into the right mindset.
The 602 Club.
So when we come kind of to the story here, and especially off of doing Literary Treks where we talk about Michael Piller's book Fade In, kind of got behind the scenes of Insurrection and really seeing how that story changed. To me, it really just exemplified the importance of story in a movie.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts. We're, of course, on iTunes, also on Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, BlackBerry, Spreaker. You can find us on SoundCloud or go to the website and stream from the show page. You can download the MP3 file from the show page. You can do that through the SoundCloud player that's embedded, or down lower, there is another player that also has a download link. And you can grab the RSS feed if you want to pop that into some other application. While you're over there on iTunes, please take a moment and leave us a star rating and a written review. That really helps us rise up in the search results. Of course, we like to know what you think about the show, and we'd love to have your reviews and read them here on the show. But that also makes a big difference in the ability of other Star Trek fans to find the Ready Room as they're searching for Star Trek podcasts. So please take a moment and do that for us. I'd also like to thank our associate producer here on The Ready Room, Renee Roberts. You can find Renee on Twitter at @Mares_1701. And she is a big supporter of the network, and The Ready Room has been since the very beginning. And I'm really so appreciative of all of Renee's support and help. And she helps us keep the show coming to you guys. And, you know, without her support, we might not be able to do The Ready Room every episode like we do right now. So please send Renee a thank you there on Twitter, Mares_1701. And if you'd like to become an associate producer, you can if you go over to Patreon and check out the different ways that you can support the network there. We are a listener-supported network, so we do need your help to keep our programming coming to you every week. Not just The Ready Room, but all the shows on the network. We have milestone contribution levels listed there, just to give you an idea of the different perks. But you can contribute any amount that you want. You can set a custom amount. Patreon is a way for you to support us on a month-to-month basis. We have so many wonderful supporters there, and we really thank everyone who has become a patron. It makes a huge difference. It is the reason why Trek FM exists and why our shows come to you every week. So head over to patreon.com/trekfm and check that out. Any support that you can give us is most appreciated. Even a dollar makes a huge difference. So we hope that you will support us over there. So, Matthew, we talked about a number of things today, especially in news, where we talked about rides we would like to see at a Universal Orlando attraction, and also who would be the most fun character to have around on the weekend. I'd love to know what other people think about that. Where is the best place for them to talk to us?
Well, Chris, honestly, the best place to get in touch with us is on the Babel Conference, which is our listener-only discussion group on Facebook. We keep it that way because we want to make sure that the discussion is lively and fun and respectful. And honestly, it's been one of the greatest experiences I've ever had on Facebook, getting to talk Trek with some awesome, awesome people. And if you'd like to join in, just go to Facebook, type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook, or you can even make it easier on yourself. Just go to our website, click discussion on the menu bar, and that'll bring you to the group. You do need to click join, and we'll let you in. And I think you're going to have a great time, because honestly, it's been the best Star Trek discussions of my life, aside from actually doing the podcast. So please join us.
Yeah, it's been great, because it does feel kind of like an extension of the shows, right, Matthew? It's the type of discussions that we have here on the show. And we only promote it here on the air, so people typically don't wander in. It really is made up of people who listen to the network, and so it's really wonderful. So we hope you'll join us there. Now, Matthew, what do people want to find you apart from the Babel Conference? Where can they find you on the network and around the interwebs?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing a show called The Orb with you, where we talk about Deep Space Nine exclusively. I'm also on another show here on the network called Literary Treks, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. I do that show with Dan Gunther. It's a lot of fun. We got great interviews with authors. Recently, we've had Una McCormick and John Jackson Miller. We have more coming up this summer. It's going to be fantastic. And we're actually, believe it or not, finally about to round out the Deep Space Nine relaunch. We're getting there. We're going to finish it this year, I promise. It's been an awesome experience. And then, of course, I do one more show on the network called The 602 Club, where we talk about all things geeky that don't necessarily have anything to do with Star Trek.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. Well, if you want to find me, you can find me, as Matthew mentioned, on The Orb, where we're talking about Deep Space Nine. And also, I do Hyper Channel, which is our short little news show. And you can find me at the Babel Conference, where I try to check in as often as I can to join in the Star Trek discussions there. And then on Twitter, my username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C, and Brian with a Y. So those are different places where you can hit us up. And as for contacting the network, in addition to the Babel Conference, you can find us on Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. Also, you can send us a voicemail if you go to speakpipe.com/TrekFM. You just need your tablet or your smartphone or your computer to do that. You can upload it from the page. And we have a contact form at trek.fm/contact. And that will come to me by email. So hope to hear from you there and hear some of your thoughts on our programming and Star Trek and whatever you want to talk about. All right, Matthew, well, I'm going to grab my trombone and head up to the Jeffries Tubes, because it just seems so acoustically perfect. I have to try it out. And if I'm lucky, maybe Robin Loeffler will be up there waiting for a kiss.
Chris, that's a fantastic idea. There is nothing better than having a nice, fun liaison with somebody there in the Jeffries Tubes. And it's time to stick a jilted redhead in it, because the Ready Room is done.
Recording.
Ooh. Picard's flute pants.
Oh,
Picard's off-duty pants.
Those are really nice pants.
No kidding.
I really like the flute
pants. I don't think he wears pants when he's off-duty. He's just in his robe.
Oh, gosh.
Those are his romance
pants. Yeah, just allowed it to, you know, breeze open there and get the fresh air going.
Yeah, free balling.
That's right. No more spandex for Picard.
I'm glad that Darren didn't mention his robe to Beverly and Sigbay.
Oh, gosh. There would have been a redheaded cat fight.
Man, that level of jealousy would have quadrupled.
Did you notice he obviously has a type, the redhead, you know? Like,
Yeah. So. There's that shot of the two of them together, and I'm like, Card's got his type for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yeah, cheating on my Beverly.
Who could cheat on that?
I don't know.
Who could do that?
I don't know. And they even had dinner together earlier. You know, like, she's just the girl that's in the wings, you know, for whenever Picard's ready, you know, to settle down and stop messing around with alien babes.
Right. And then she totally gets friend-zoned in this episode.
Totally gets friend-zoned. It's
But we got to talk about that in the actual show.
Let's do it on the show. Okay, here, I'm going to lead us into this. All right.